Well, guys, we're going to go ahead and jump right into the message today. We are the second week in the series, This is the Way, and it's based out of Isaiah 30, 21, where it says, we see Isaiah speaking, and he's speaking on behalf of the Lord. He says, you'll hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. And I want you to walk in the fullness that God has for you. That's what this series is all about. And last week, we talked about developing a generous heart, developing a grateful heart, and dealing with that selfish heart and grieving heart, because Proverbs 4:23 tells us, you know, every issue in life flows from our heart. It says, guard your heart, from out of it flows every issue of life. And my heart for you is that yours is dedicated to the Lord. That's the first step in following Him, that our heart is completely His, and we have a grateful heart, we have a generous heart, because we've been able to receive everything that God has for us. Well, today, I want to talk to you about a very simple principle, and it's dealing with the principle of abundance versus the principle of scarcity. And so I want to go all the way back to God's purpose and plan for creation. You see, He created this world, a perfect, sinless, non-broken, completely functional world. And He put Adam and Eve in a garden where every need they would ever have would be met. And every day they got to physically walk and talk with God. They were in a real face-to-face relationship with the creator of the universe. And the only rule, the only one rule that He had, it was really just so that there was choice, because love always requires choice. He said, don't eat from this one tree in the middle of the garden. And you know the story, they did. They chose their own way. They were both deceived. They didn't do what they were supposed to. And sin and brokenness entered the world. Why am I recounting all of that? Because I want you to know that God's purpose and plan for us as people has always and forever been for us to walk in right relationship with Him and for us to never, ever have to worry about any of our needs being met. And because God's purpose and plan for all of us was to always have our needs met, even in the brokenness of a sinful world, we can know as followers of Jesus, as His children, that He still provides for us today. So I want to look at a couple examples of what it means to live in the place of abundance. So we're going to start in John chapter 12, and it's really comparing and contrasting a heart and an understanding of someone who lives in abundance and someone who lives in scarcity and lack. So here we go, John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. And this is where Jesus is returning to Jerusalem. Passover's coming up. Jesus knows, and He's already told His disciples, listen, I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be handed over. I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be crucified. Like, it's coming. And so here we see this, and I'm just going to jump right in. John 12, chapter 1, it says, 6 days before the Passover celebration began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus. Now, Bethany's just outside of Jerusalem. The man He had raised from the dead, Lazarus. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with Him. Well, if you know the story, you know Mary, Martha, Lazarus, they were related. Lazarus had died, Jesus raised him from the dead. Then Mary, who was a follower of Jesus, verse 3, then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping His feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. Look at verse 4. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray Him, said, that perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor. Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief, and since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. So we see in the first six verses this story playing out. Jesus is at the home of some friends. He's going to be eating Passover. Passover's coming soon, but he's at his friend's house, very close, about 2 miles from Jerusalem. He's with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, who He raised from the dead, and all of His closest disciples. And Mary takes expensive perfume that she had either saved up and bought or had been handed down generationally because it was so outrageously expensive. And she pours it over Jesus' feet and wipes His feet with her hair. And Judas becomes indignant. Do you know how much that's worth? What's he say? That perfume was worth a year's wages. That's how expensive it was. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor. Jesus' reply, leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. Then verse 8, and this is key, I want you to get this. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Jesus didn't rebuke her. He didn't side with Judas, who said, that was worth a year's wages. So think about that. Think about your annual salary being poured out onto the feet of Jesus in something that just smelled good. And Jesus' response was not Judas's. And so I've just always had a couple questions about this story. Here's the first one, and it deals with both Mary and Judas. Here's the first one. Why was Mary so generous? And why did Mary's generosity bother Judas so much? Why was Mary so generous? I mean, that was a year's wages. Like, if I'm honest, it's probably easier for me to understand the perspective of Judas. Like, you could have sold that and helped so many people. Mary, what are you thinking? But Jesus didn't rebuke Mary. He rebuked Judas. Why is that? And I can't help but think it's because Mary had an understanding of who Jesus was and where everything in this world comes from. And Judas had a heart that wasn't right. It's interesting to me. I wrote this. There were two hearts that were revealed. Mary's was a generous heart and understood gratitude and abundance. She had received so much from Jesus that it was easy for her to give all. But Judas's heart was a selfish heart that lived within the bounds of limitation and embraced scarcity. You see, abundance recognizes, like, if we're following the Lord, it's like we're back in the garden. Listen, I know we live in a broken world, but if we follow the Lord, if we follow Jesus, that he brings his kingdom to this earth, and it's the same one that he initially made, and he gave us a choice if we're going to follow him or not in this life. And as I follow Jesus at every turn, I know this, he's going to take care of me. And that's where Mary was. That's why she was able to pour that out, because she knew that Jesus meets every need, not just every one of her needs, but everyone around her that follows him, because God takes care of his own. If you have children, you know what I mean. You'd never neglect them. But Judas's heart didn't understand that. We see that his heart was messed up because we recognize he was a thief. We know that he was the one who would betray Jesus, but there was a heart thing right there. And here's the common denominator in both of those hearts. That it was generosity and giving that revealed what was on the inside. How do I respond when other people extravagantly lay everything they have at the feet of Jesus? And am I willing to do that? That's a pretty big question. So here's the question I'm going to ask you. Where do you live? Where do you live? Do you live in the place of scarcity? Scarcity says there's never enough. So in an attempt to make sure that all of my needs are met and everything in my life is in order so that I can survive, I need to constantly be looking for more and taking care of what I have because I am my own source. This is scarcity. There's never quite enough. But abundance recognizes that God is the source of all, and we trust him with everything. Where do you live? Where do you live, in the place of scarcity, or do you live in the place of abundance? If God is a good God and we are indeed his children, will he not take care of us? Yeah. And if we'll, and here's a big caveat. I want you to get this. If we are his children, not only will we trust him and know that he meets all of our needs, but we will step out in that faith and trust in him and become what we're called to be, living out our purpose and our plan. You can't say, well, I'm a child of God, therefore I don't have to do anything. Because you're a child of God, you know God's call on your life. And Mary understood that. Judas didn't. And in the end, both their hearts were revealed. Because on the cross, one was looking into the eyes of Jesus, and the other had already killed himself. And I think many times people live in the place of death because they don't understand that we are called to live in abundance. And listen to me carefully, that's a heart issue. How we respond when other people lay their lives at the feet of Jesus and their physical goods, it determines, like, it reveals a lot about what's going on inside of us. I want you to know that God's good and that he takes care of all of your needs as you follow him. I so want you to follow him. So we're going to look at the source of scarcity. Are you ready? Because it's pretty simple. Here's the source of scarcity. It's fear. It's fear. I'm not going to have enough. I don't have enough. I can't, I won't, I'm not able to. It is rooted in fear. It leads to anxiety. It leads to worry. It leads to control. It is rooted in fear. I want to read you something that we see Jesus speaking about in Luke chapter 16. He says, if you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who'll trust you with the riches of heaven? And if you are not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. And then Jesus says this. He says, you cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Here's what I want you to know, that money and how we view it and how we use it and how we live with it or without it is a test. Money is a test. And Jesus is the one that says, listen, you can't serve two masters. Either you're going to be all in with me or not. You can't serve God and money. But the word that's used in verse 13 is in the Greek, it's mammon. It's mammon, and it references a Near Eastern deity that was the god of all wealth, all physical goods. And so what Jesus is saying in this when he says that no one can serve two masters, you're going to love one, hate one, love the other, you'll be devoted to one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to a spirit of fear that your wealth is derived from what you do. It's not derived from me. It's derived from something else. Listen to me. Money is a test. And the reason that we're looking at Mary and we're looking at Judas is because one understood that everything belonged to God and the other was looking at money as a source of their own fulfillment. And man, that is what I want for you, is to not live like Judas, but to live like a Mary who's able to lay everything at the feet of Jesus. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, the love of money is the root of all evil. So here's the thing. Money's not wrong. Money's amoral. It's not either right or wrong. It's not evil. It's not good. It is amoral. But all evil is rooted in the love of money. What does that mean? That means if you give your heart to a spirit of mammon, a spirit of wealth, you have made yourself your provider. You've made yourself God. The spirit of mammon isn't some demonic deity. It's putting yourself in the place of God and trusting you with your resources. I hope that makes sense to you guys, that you're following along and know that God's heart for you is to be able to trust him. 1 Corinthians 10:12 and 13 says this, if you think you're standing strong, be careful not to fall. The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience. What does that mean? That means we're all tempted with the same things, and everybody has to battle through the temptation of who is my source? Am I living in scarcity, fearful that I'm not going to have enough to make ends meet, fearful that my kids are not going to have food or clothes, I'm not going to have enough gas to get to the store? Can I just tell you, God's call on your life is for you to surrender everything to Him. He wants all of you, and money is a test. Why? Because it reveals who we truly believe our source is. So are you freaked out and afraid that you're not going to have enough? Listen to me, that is living in scarcity. We're all tempted with that, but I'm going to read on. It says, the temptations in your life are no different from what others experience, and God is faithful. That's so interesting that he says, and God is faithful. I want you to know this, God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. And when you are tempted, he will show you a way out so that you can endure. How do you get out of the mindset of scarcity? You have to know who God is. And then you have to step out into the truth that you know despite how you feel. What does that practically look like? What's that practically look like? Honestly, it's what we talked about last week. Dealing with a selfish heart. Dealing with a grieving heart. Remember, a selfish heart, before you are generous, before you give to God or other people, a selfish heart says, don't do it, don't do it. And if you give into that, you won't. You won't give to people in need. You won't give to the Lord. You won't do it. A grieving heart does it, but with the wrong heart, and afterwards it aches because, like, fine, I know they need something. I'm going to help them out, but now you have a bad heart. But our call is to develop a generous and grateful heart. Why was Mary able to pour a year's worth of salary? Then we're talking tens and tens of thousands of dollars in today's money. Pour it out on Jesus' feet. Use her hair to clean his feet and honor him. Because she was grateful for what he had already done in her life. And so she was able to give everything she had because she had the revelation that he was the source of all she had anyway. And she lived in abundance. Judas lived in scarcity. His heart wasn't right. And it ended up being the death of him and the betrayal of Jesus. This is where we all end up. God is so black and white. We're either one or the other. Am I willing to lay everything that I have before the Lord? Or am I going to seek out of fear? I don't have enough. We end up trying to put our hands, make ourselves the source. We end up at the place of control because of fear. And control always leads to death when we are the ones in control. What happens when we live a life of abundance, trusting God with all of our heart, knowing that he's the source of everything? It's Philippians 4:19. It's one of my life verses. It says, my God shall supply all of your needs according to his riches and glory. When you know that, like that is so written on my heart. I've never, honestly, there have been fleeting moments, maybe a few times in my life where I freaked out about money. And then I remembered something that my parents taught me. God really is in control. None of the stuff is mine. If everything that I had burned up in a fire and I didn't have anything but my life, I'd still be alive and it's going to be okay because God is my source. My God shall supply all of my needs. Not all my wants, but all my needs according to his riches and glory because my life is his. My children are his. My wife is his. My house is his. My cars are his. My foods, everything is his. So I can live in a place of abundance because I know that he will always provide my needs. What happens? What's the outcome? This is what I wrote. What's the outcome of abundant living? Contentment. Fearlessness. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to die because my life is the Lord's. My life is in his hands. My children's lives, I'm not going to worry about their death. I mean, I can't tell you how many mamas I've talked to that they have to fight this fear where they see these horrible things play in their brain, this image in their brain, this movie reel of the terrible things happening to their children. No, listen to me. We don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know who holds the future. And I know we live in a broken, messed up world where drunk drivers do damage. But guess what? God's still good. And I know that the Lord is at work in my family and in my life. And I'm going to live in a place of abundance because he's my source. And I can live in a place of contentment. And when I'm able to be content with what he's given me, knowing that there's always going to be enough to meet my needs, regardless of whether I'm hungry or poor by the world standards, God's going to meet my needs. He's going to take care of me. He's going to take care of my kids. There's a contentment. There's a fearlessness. I don't have to walk in fear. and that I can walk in favor with God. I can please God. Hebrews 11:6 says this, and it is impossible to please God without faith, because the outcome of abundant living is faith. You trust God. See, the source of scarcity is fear. But when you have faith in God, you're living an abundant life. I want you to develop some crazy faith where you can trust God with the future. You can give him your children. You can give him the pain of your past, knowing that he's going to bring healing to you. You can give the future that seems scary and uncertain, and we don't know what's going to happen in the world around us, but you don't have to live in fear when you are willing to lay everything at the feet of Jesus, because you know that he is the source of all life. Where'd you come from? My mom and my daddy. Okay, where'd they come from? Let's just trace this back. God is the source of life, both originally and personally for each of us. And when we as his children realize that and we live open-handed, Lord, everything I have is yours. You can have whatever you want. It's all yours. My life is yours. There's such a peace that comes. I want that for you. 2 Corinthians 8, St. Paul writes this to the church in Corinth. He says, I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters. Now remember, he's writing a letter to a church. I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia. They're being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor. So he's writing to the Corinth and say, hey, I want to tell you about what's going on in Macedonia. You know those churches and those people there, they're very poor. But they're also filled with abundant joy. Because if you think that physical wealth is going to bring spiritual satisfaction, you were sorely mistaken. He's saying, listen, in Macedonia, they're poor, but they have such abundant joy. They're filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more, and they did it of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem, because Paul's bringing a gift for the poor believers in Jerusalem. And here we have, he's writing to the church in Corinth saying, these Macedonians, man, they were poor, but they were so joyful to be able to give and asked me to give even more of themselves. How could they do that? Because they knew who the source of life is. Verse 5, they even did more than we had hoped. For their first action, look at this. This is the key to abundant living. They even did more than we had hoped. For their first action was to give themselves to the Lord and to us, just as God wanted them to do. God's heart is for you to live in abundance, but you'll never do it until you realize that your call is to God and people, and that when you put your life and your faith and your trust in the hands of the Lord, and you recognize your calling is to him and to people, and you live a life of abundance, you are able to generously and freely give to God and to the people around you. When you do that, the fruit of God's Spirit. When you give yourself to the Lord truly and say, my life is yours, you experience his love, his joy. There's a peace that passes understanding that comes. Love, joy, peace. You don't worry. You don't live in fear. You're at the place of contentment. This is the way that we hear a voice behind us saying, don't worry. It's Matthew chapter 6. Jesus tells his followers, don't worry about what you're going to wear. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. Trust me. If I'm going to take care of the sparrows, I'm going to take care of you. Look at the lilies. They're beautiful. I clothe them. Trust me. I want you to have faith in him. Maybe you've been living in fear, but maybe right now you can sense the presence of the Lord right where you are saying, trust me. Maybe you need to step out in faith and trust him with everything that you have, and surrender all of you to God. His call on your life is to him, and give to him and to the people around you. Maybe you need to do that right now. Maybe you need to surrender your selfish and sinful heart to him. And if that's you, I want to pray with you. Say, dear Jesus, I surrender my life to you. I turn from my selfish, sinful ways. I trust you with everything in me. I'm yours. Amen. If that's you, let us know what's going on. Click on the link in the chat box beneath. Connect with us so that we can connect you with the purpose and plan God has for you. Love you guys. See you soon. God bless.